there's this, obviously, Hare Krishna, a temple, Bhagavad Gita, there is prasadam inside. So Bhagavad Gita, as it is, actually, I'm going to talk about a couple of topics. Is anyone here for the first time? For the first time? Welcome. Good that you came. So this may be a little, you speak English, both of you, yeah? So it may be a little esoteric, but you'll be fine with that?
Yes.
All right. So first let's read a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. So there's a, is that a German or Russian section over there?
German.
German. Okay. Okay. So I just happened to open in this page. It's chapter 3, text 43, Karma Yoga. Title. First, one should understand what karma is. Karma is activities that produce a reaction. Just like the Newton's third law of motion, that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. So when one incurs into some kind of activity, the activity will bring some kind of reaction. So this is karma, simple. If the action is pious, nice, generous, philanthropic, then it will bring a good reaction as in the form of wealth, prosperity, happiness, good health, etc. And if the action is impure and selfish and cruel, then it will bring a different reaction, which is sickness, maybe if it is very sinful, you may see a person with a severe deformity or a mental disability. This is all the product of their own karma. They actually did something in the past, and this is the result. They get some bad reaction. There is no divine justice is infallible. Action. It's not like if you, let's say you drive your car and you go through a red light and the police doesn't catch you, that's it, you're free. Well, the law of karma is a little more complicated, and the cameras are situated everywhere, so you never get away. No. You will never get away from karma. But there's a concession. Krishna consciousness is the key to get out of karma. Because karma, whether it's good or bad, is equally bad. That means you have to come to the material world to experience the result of your karma. Whether it's, if you have bad karma, because you're a bad person, a nasty person, then you have to come back and experience pain and discomfort and sickness and all sorts of distress. And if you do good things, you open a hospital and you just feed people, even vegetarian food and whatever it is, then you have to come back. You take birth in a very rich family and you get fame and you get beautiful body, etc., etc. But then you have to still take birth, get old, and die. So karma is not good. It's there. But it's, you can transcend karma, and that's the purpose. That's why Krishna explained the Bhagavad Gita to his friend Arjuna. Are you familiar with this book, Bhagavad Gita? Yeah. So there's a conversation where Arjuna was in trouble because he didn't want to kill his own family. That's a good source of trouble. And Krishna asked God himself, convinced him to kill his own family. So you see. Krishna is a little apparently unusual. But he explained to Arjuna that we're not the body, that there is no way you can save your family, because time is going to come and take the bodies away. They're going to die no matter what you do. And if you don't fight them, then they, because they are bad people, they're going to take over and they're going to make everybody unhappy. They're going to torture everybody. So he part of his family was good, part of his family was bad. So Krishna was telling him to get rid of the bad part of the family. Just like if you have gangrene in a leg, sometimes you have to amputate the leg to save the body. So this is what Krishna was asking of Arjuna, to eliminate the gangrene from the body of the Kurus, the dynasty. So let's read from the Bhagavad Gita here. Evam buddhe param buddhva samstabhaya manamatmana jahi satrum mahabaho karma rupam durasadam. The translation and Prabhupada Prabhupada. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, O mighty Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. Purport. This third chapter of Bhagavad Gita is conclusively directed to Krishna consciousness by knowing oneself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without considering impersonal voidness the ultimate end. In the material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire for dominating the resources of material nature. Desire for overlording and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the material senses, the mind, and the intelligence. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden, but by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind. By steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity. This is sum total of this chapter. In the immature stage of material existence, philosophical speculations and artificial attempts to control the senses by the so-called practice of yoga postures can never help a man towards spiritual life. He must be trained in Krishna consciousness by higher intelligence. That's in the Bhaktivedanta Purport, the third chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, in the matter of karma yoga, or the discharge of one's prescribed duty in Krishna consciousness. So this may seem a little partial. I say, well, you said Krishna consciousness, other people say other things. So why? What's the difference? Well, the ultimate goal of life is actually love, is to love God and love everyone. You can't do it the other way around, because then you always find fault. If you try to love someone, or even a community or a family, you will do it at the expense of other communities and other families. So it's not love unless it's selfless. So if you love certain people and not other people, then you really cannot love God with that mentality. So if you go the other way around, if you try to love God because everybody is part and parcel of God, then you can love everybody else. It's the same family. You can see them as one family. So this is the advantage of Krishna consciousness. And you can say, well, but in other religions and other philosophical paths, they also have this concept of higher consciousness and love, etc., etc. But there is an ingredient, a very, very fundamental ingredient that is usually missing, which is the detail. All the details about the personality of God. We cannot love objects, and we cannot love subjects that we don't know. I mean, your love for an object, obviously, you know, women love diamonds, okay, but that's a different topic. This, oh, I love that ring, and then they find another ring, and then they find a bracelet, and then they find a chain, and then they find something else, and you know, but these are material objects. We are spiritual souls. We can never be satisfied by any of the ingredients of a material world. So whether they are diamonds or furniture or food or music or anything, you can love some. But by repetition, you will be actually tired of it, rapidly tired of it. Like, I'm sure you have a favorite song. I don't know. I'm not familiar with German music besides Bert Kempfert and Kraftwerk. So that's all I know about German music. But, you know, you may love a couple songs, but you cannot listen to them all day long because it drives you crazy eventually. So any type of ingredient from the material world is lovable to an extent. As long as it's material, we cannot be satisfied because we are spiritual, we need something else. So the idea that we can develop love without knowing the object of our love is ludicrous. Like, how can you, you're a person. Okay. We are not the body, but you're still a person. Within this body, there is a soul, an individual soul that needs personal love, personal care, personal attention. So the only way to encounter that is to find another spirit to love. And why not go to the highest, the Supreme Spirit? So if you don't, you cannot love infinity and all these absolute terms, because they're hard to, you can't hug them. You can't bake them a cake. It's just, what are you gonna do? Bake a cake for infinity? It has to be a large cake too. So you have to actually understand that God is also a person, because this is a part of ourselves that we consider the highest, our personality, with all the defects and impurities and crazy stuff that we do. Still, we wouldn't trade our personality for someone else's personality. Obviously, we are very attached to our own craziness. So this Krishna is the Supreme Person, which doesn't mean that is a person like us, but is a person. It has the attributes that God has are in the supreme degree. It's like if you say, well, there is a person that is beautiful and another person is more beautiful. Well, God is more beautiful than all of them. It's not like that it doesn't have a face, because no face is not very beautiful. If you see, you know, all of a sudden your boyfriend or girlfriend come back home and they don't have a head, that will be a problem. It will be a lot more quiet, the household, for sure. But still, it will be a problem, because it's hard to love a person without a head. So Krishna has a head, has hands, has lotus feet, has everything, has intelligence, has beauty, has sense of humor and artistry, but in the supreme degree, it's unlimited. And he can attract everyone. God can attract everyone. That's why God's name is Krishna. Krishna means the one who can attract everyone. So it doesn't matter what particular form of God you're worshiping. You're worshiping Krishna. You're worshiping the Supreme Lord in a different feature, in a different aspect. Just like if you know a person intimately, you may know more than one name of that person. The person has a name that the mother used to call her or him when they were young. They may have a nickname that they picked up in school. They may have another nickname that they pick up when playing sports, etc., etc. Many names, but it's the same person. And the person may go through changes, but it's the same person. So God is the same, has many names, has many features. He appears in different ways for different religions and for different purposes, but it's the same God. Everybody's worshiping the same God. And everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants love. Everyone wants to give one's love and to receive love. And this is only possible by loving God first. As we say in English, you know, don't put the cart before the horse, because it's not going anywhere. So to put the horse before the cart is to understand that the supreme source of love is Krishna. And unless we love Krishna, we will never love ourselves. We will never love anybody else. It will be just a superficial interaction. So, Karma Yoga is one of methods by which we can approach the Supreme. But we have trouble in this age, because in this age, people don't have that kind of time. You know, you see people going with a mat, you know, a yoga mat rolled up, going to a yoga session, and they take a yoga session once a week. I did twice a week this year, and fantastic. I'm finally getting somewhere. This is not real, not good use of your time, because we don't have the time to practice yoga and achieve self-realization through Ashtanga yoga, Kundalini yoga, Hatha yoga, even Buddha yoga. All these yogas are lower stages. Basically, you're trying to yoga is teaching you to sit down and shut up. That's the idea of yoga. Sit down, shut up. And when you do that, you may be able to control your mind. And if you control your mind, then you may be able to focus inside, where there is an expansion of God known as the Paramatma. So a true yogi, advanced yogi, can see God within oneself, next to oneself. It's not one. It's two people living within each of us. It's the super soul and the soul. But again, we don't have time. We barely have time to do that. So what do you do? Well, the concession is given in this age for unfortunate people like us, all of us. Manda sumanda matayo. The Bhagavatam, another scripture, says that in this age of Kali, that is the last many thousands of years, everybody's unfortunate. Everybody's unlucky. You know, there's problems everywhere, quarrel, and everybody's has short temper, short intelligence, and no memory at all. The concession given in this age is you can actually practice mantra meditation. When you chant mantra, the mantras will control your mind. Well, all those exercises on all those asanas that you practice can be summarized. Something can be just eliminated by just practicing mantra yoga. You just chant the mantra. There are many mantras that you can chant, but there is a supreme mantra, which are the most intimate names of God. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This mantra is so powerful that can immediately, no matter what position you occupy, no matter what path you're following, no matter what situation you're undergoing, no matter what background, what kind of wealth or intelligence you have, doesn't matter if your mind is driving you crazy or driving others crazy, the mantra will actually control it. If you chant properly, just chanting is a very good start. But then if you learn how to chant properly with attention, that you actually concentrate and repeat the mantra so you can hear it over and over until all these cobwebs, all this dirt within the heart is cleansed, eliminated, and you can actually see yourself and see God. So the chanting is the method prescribed for this age of Kali. Harinama, harinama, harinama eva kevalam kalo nastyeva, nastyeva, nastyeva kathiranyata. In the scriptures, there are many references to chanting, and there is one from the Brihadnarada Purana that repeats three times. This is very unusual, and the scriptures are not repetitious. Now, they don't bother just, you know, going over things a lot of time. It's understood that they are written for intelligent people. So when there is so much emphasis that something is repeated three times within the same sentence, it's to be understood that I better pay attention. This must be really important. So Harinama, 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 the chanting of the holy name is Harinama eva kevalam. Is spewed. Kalo nasteva. In this age of Kali, there is no other way to achieve perfection. Nasteva. Don't bother. Just don't. Forget it. Just don't go there. Just forget it and chat. And you'll be fine. And it is not in exchange of something else. Although, there's a book called The Way of a Pilgrim. This was written in Russian about a century ago, where there was this man. He was very pious, And he wanted to understand a passage from the Old Testament. I think it was from the Old Testament, where it says that one should chant the name of God ceaselessly, meaning without end, non-stop. So he couldn't understand that one. And the people he talked to, they didn't know what to say. And he actually became, by his own choice, he became a mendicant. So he will actually travel on foot with hardly any possessions, and he will go to different monasteries and stay there for a night or two and talk to the different priests and abbots and friars and ask about this particular portion. But what does it mean that one should chant the name of God ceaselessly, without end? And eventually, and he had his own practice. He would say certain prayers in the morning, certain prayers in the afternoon, and certain prayers before going to sleep. And, you know, he would eat very little, just bread, water, just whatever the monks gave him. And eventually one monk told him in one of these visits, you should say the prayer of Christ. Oh Lord Jesus, please give me your mercy. He said, just chant that 300 times a day and send him his way. And then he started saying that, you know, over and over, you know, 300 times a day. And then he came back to, after a while, he came back to this monk, and he said, the monk asked him, so how are you doing? He said, I'm doing fine. But I'm having trouble doing the other prayers. I really, my mind is so full and occupied with this prayer that you gave me that I don't have room for anything else. I'm always thinking about it. I'm always repeating it. He said, good, double it. Just chant more. So this is how he found out that it's actually possible, because it's not the repetition, vain repetition of some name, you know. Like, you know, Dita, you know, or whatever, Helga. It's not an ordinary name. These names are actually spiritual. The difference between our names and ourselves is that we are a person and we have a name. God's name is not different from God. Anything about God is God as well. So the name of God, in particular, is imbibed with the substance, with the essence of God. God himself is present 100% within his name. So if you chant God's name, God is present in your tongue, right there, with you, at all times. So that's why when one chants, and the more one chants, the more one wants to chant. I mean, that should be the experience. If one chants properly, that's what happens, that the more you chant, the more you want to chant. And if you chant improperly, without attention, then it make you actually are giving room to your material mind and your material intelligence to come and have a conversation, which is not very productive. We've been doing that for a long time, and, you know, it didn't work out for us, obviously. Otherwise, we wouldn't be gathered here. We already figure out, okay, I know the purpose of life, I'm happy, you know, good luck to all of you. But actually, we are trying to reach the roots of our existence. And the root of our existence is God, Krishna. So, on that note, God is usually also appears in different forms and different temples. And next Saturday, he's actually going out. He's actually having a ball and going out to have fun with everybody and go to meet his subjects somehow or other. You know. So this is a very, although it appears a little trivial maybe, it's not quite like that. This form of Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra, that are on the altar, these are very ancient forms according to specific instructions how these deities should be carved, should be made.
And Krishna accepts worship in many forms. Of course, we perhaps cannot relate to figures. You know, how come God has a, well, if God has a name, he can also have a representation, you know, in a material, a so-called material form, and he can permeate it and make it spiritual. So Jagannath, he's actually the culmination of the highest love. Because it's, when Jagannath comes out and parades in front of everyone, and particularly in front of Lord Chaitanya, Krishna himself, in the form of Radharani, merged with Krishna. Then this is a pastime that never had really happened, which is Krishna going back to Vrindavan for this. You know, you'll have to catch up eventually. You guys came here for the first time. You know, there's a lot to catch up, but I'm sure you will. So it's actually Krishna left Vrindavan, although Krishna never left Vrindavan. Still, he visually left Vrindavan and never came back. And Lord Jagannath going on parade is actually Krishna going back to Vrindavan. So when Lord Chaitanya, who is Radharani, in separation from Krishna, sees Krishna going back to Vrindavan, goes bananas. So if we can see that, we are very lucky indeed. And if you actually can see that, then you don't have to worry about karma. You're done. You don't have to take another birth. And so, to the fact of seeing Lord Jagannath and dancing in front of Lord Jagannath and following the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya is a great privilege, and brought to the West by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, who before that we didn't even know anything. We didn't even know what cumin was. So what to speak of Jagannath or Lord Chaitanya or Krishna. So somehow or other, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, this Ratha Yatra festival, which is the highest esoteric truth that actually never took place, coming to the streets of Berlin. Can you believe that? That's a hard one to believe. You know, of all the places in the world that could be auspicious and propitious, Krishna happens to come to Berlin somehow or other. Why not? Krishna can go everywhere. He can do anything. He can also dance in the streets of Berlin if he wishes to. So you're all invited, and you should actually, when you come to the festival, not if you come, when you come to the festival, you should actually offer prayers as you see Lord Jagannath, and dance in front of Lord Jagannath, and chant with your heart. Just abandon yourself. Just don't care about what your mind says, what other people think. Just forget it. Leave it behind. Just be yourself. Just throw yourself in. This is the party of the century. You have to take part of it. This is a real rave, and goes on eternally. It's not like 3 days. It goes on for a long, lot longer than that. So, in order to understand Krishna consciousness, one has to practice it. You can't make it into a hobby. I mean, it's okay, but it's like, let's say you want to study physics, and you just read a magazine every other week. That may help you a little bit, but really you won't get very proficient. So what you have to do is to study, to apply yourself, to practice, to go to the lab, to consult with people who know about this. So if you actually want to become a transcendentalist, if you actually want to become happy, because unless you know who you are, you will never be happy. Unless you have peace, you will never have happiness. So if you want to do that, then you will get the blessings. They say that Krishna has 10 arms. You know, it's a figure of speech, although he could. But he can give you more than what he can hold with two arms. In other words, whatever you want. you will have it. So you should ask for the right thing, because Krishna will give you also the result of your material desires. So if you have material desires and you ask Krishna, please fulfill my material desires, Krishna will fulfill them in a certain way that you will never ask for them again. Because he will make you very, very, very frustrated with that. He will give you stuff that you won't know what to do with, and you will be overwhelmed and happy because you will get the result of the stuff that is not really for you. So you should ask for spiritual fulfillment. And Krishna already tells you, this is pretty simple, just chant my name. Chant Hare Krishna as often as you can, as much as you can, and as nicely as you can. And you will get everything, automatically, without separate endeavor. So I think this is a good time to stop and ask for questions or comments. Thank you very much for paying attention and for welcoming me to, and my wife to Berlin, a place that we actually do like. We do like. So any questions or comments? Related or unrelated to what I spoke about?
Wishes
that can be used
in a spiritual way?
Okay, give me an example.
Maybe I want to become a musician, Krishna.
Ah, a musician.
For example, I had the desire to be a computer expert, and later I used this.
Yeah, there's no problem with that. If it is the right if you're destined to be a musician, if Krishna wants you to be a musician, there's no way you can be anything else. So there's the problem is that there's a story when there was a devotee who went to ask Prabhupada. He had some kind of desire. Let's say, I can't remember what the case was, but let's say he wanted to play guitar for Krishna. All right. So he went to ask. The story is true, although the example may not be. So he went to ask Prabhupada, our spiritual guide. Prabhupada, I would love to play the guitar for Krishna. And Prabhupada said, no, it's nonsense. Forget about it. And he said, but I could be really good at this. And Prabhupada said, it's not necessary. But I think my desire is so strong that my will is so firm that I will actually do so much good with it. I don't think it's good for you. But Prabhupada, I've been always thinking about this, and I thought it was a good idea. And then Prabhupada said, okay, do it. And then he comes out and he said, Prabhupada, I love the idea. So this is the problem with us asking Krishna for things that we really don't want, we really don't need. And Krishna said, really not a good idea. No, I don't think so. Not really. All right, if that's what you want, go ahead. And then you go ahead and you do it, and it's like you're driving without GPS. You're going in the opposite direction, and you're waving to everybody, all happy. And then by the time you go about 200 kilometers, you realize you're going in the opposite direction, and you have to come back, fill up the tank again, and start your journey in the opposite direction. So it's better to try to find out what Krishna wants from us. Because there are two things. What we want to do for Krishna and what Krishna wants us to do for him. Those are two different things usually. Of course, we have a certain set of skills certain wishes that may not be very easy to eradicate if they are the incorrect ones. So sometimes we have to work through it. We have to just do stuff until you realize that this is not going to go anywhere. That's why in the Upadeshamrita, over-endeavor is criticized. Like if it's something takes, it's just too hard, you know, forget it. Just not that if something is hard, but if something is really repeatedly hard or difficult and you're not getting very far, then go somewhere else. Don't try to obsess over it and, you know, try to finish the project because you started. I know well about it. I'm like that, you know, when I start something, I want to finish it. And sometimes I don't think about it, I just keep going. So, yes, some things can be used. Everything, probably everything can be used in Bhakti Yoga. But you need guidance. You need guidance in order to see. So maybe the guru is not the person who's going to tell you that because, you know, you're not close to them or, you know, he's traveling somewhere else. And you, but there is always association. There is always wise people and saintly people that you can consult and you can get an idea of what, if you're, what you're doing is right or wrong, what they think, you know. Their opinion should count. Because Krishna likes to speak to saintly people, so you should listen to them too. So, musician, computer, whatever you have, yeah, it can be used, but depends. Some people are, they get entangled. You see, you get so much into something that you just forget Krishna. So that's, the idea is to remember Krishna through whatever you do. So if the center of your activity is not Krishna, then you're doing the wrong thing. Yeah, yes.
You said we cannot love ourselves and other people. We cannot love ourselves and other people unless we love God.
Uh-huh.
But isn't it also the other way around? If we cannot accept ourselves and other people, then how we can love God?
I'm not saying at the expense of loving ourselves we should love God or loving others. I'm just saying that we should go the correct way. Yes. Not that you just love God and hate the world.
It's not possible, I think.
Yeah, it is possible. Yeah. It is possible, yes. It is. You have some examples in this country, actually. You have a few examples of that. This idea of loving God first is simply to put things in perspective. You go to the source. You go to the source. Why just waste time with the little details? You see, in logic, there are two ways to analyze things. One is to analyze every instance. But it's very difficult once you do that to put everything together in perspective. And another thing is to analyze as a complex, everything as part of it. So, if you love Krishna, understanding that everyone is part and parcel of Krishna, that's the proper understanding. It's not like you're sacrificing anybody and you're just hating yourself and you're loving Krishna. No, you're actually loving everyone. It's the same family. It's the same.
Those things are right.
Yeah, we're all related. We are all related. But how are we related? We are related because we have the same father. That's where the link is. So if you see the same father for every living entity, even animals, even vegetables, then you will love the creation. And if you see all the small little things and, you know, I love the kitten but I don't like the gorilla, no. That's no. You have to love everything about Krishna. And the only thing you have to avoid is those things that may distract you from this understanding. You see, people who will drag you down. Like, the association is very important, as I was telling him, you know, associate with saintly people and you get saintly advice. If you associate with drunks, you will become a drunkard. If you associate with musicians, you may become a musician. If you associate with saintly people, you may become a saint yourself. So it's very important who you're with. Sure. Anything else?
You were stressing the importance of chanting and that we should practice to chant properly. So maybe you can elaborate a little bit about how to chant properly.
I can only tell you what I read about.
As far as my chanting is horrible, and I can't vouch for my own chanting. Unfortunately, I can't pay attention. Even after so many years of chanting, I still have trouble controlling my mind, so I will listen to the chanting. But I try to pray, I try to cry to the deities and to Krishna and the devotees, please, let me chant. Let me chant sincerely. It depends on your evolution. You know, it depends how, on your sincerity. I think it's based on your sincerity. How much do you want? How badly do you want? And then slowly, that intense hankering, intense desire, that is the price, the ticket back to Krishna. That intense desire to have Krishna will take you back. So chanting is like any other activity. If you cook for others and you just hate what you're doing, or if you chant, then you just don't care about it. You know, it's the same result. You get very little. Yeah, people eat what you cook, but they don't feel very good about it. So how does Krishna feel hearing me chant his name? I don't want to know. Probably not very good. But I'm trying. I try every day. I use a technique, because when, as you know, we make a vow, some of us, and chant 16 rounds minimum. So usually we have a tendency to rush through chanting, chanting on the rosary, on the japa mala. And when I get to 15, then I slow down. And I say, okay, I got the 15 out of the way. Let me do at least one round that's somewhat decent that I can hear. So I slow down and I chant purposefully the last round. And the goal is that eventually I will stop at 14 and do that, and then stop at 13, etc. And then start my japa that way. But I only managed to do 15 so far, and then slow down. It depends on your sincerity. Depends how sincere you are. Krishna knows. Krishna's within your heart. He knows how sincere you are. And he will stimulate and fan that desire. So if the desire is not there, Krishna has no business. He has no job there. You have to cultivate the desire first. I was doing a little job today. My wife was giving your wife some earrings that she bought for her, and it's their little golden chain, and the chain was tied in a knot, and it's very difficult to undo a little chain that is tied in a knot. So I tried. I used a safety pin and glasses and good lighting, and I wasn't going anywhere. So I started praying. I said, no, Krishna, I can't do this one. This is beyond my pay grade, beyond my skill grade, so you have to help me. And immediately the chain came loose and opened up. So Krishna is not like has forgotten us. He's, as they usually say, Krishna is in some other universe smoking ganja and forgot about us, which is, these people, what about these people? Oh yeah, that was a long time ago, isn't it? No, Krishna is actually within our heart. He can hear every thought and every heartbeat. So he's very attentive. He's just waiting for us to turn to him. So we have to give him the job to do, but the right job, not asking for the wrong thing. Krishna, please help me. As Janice Joplin said, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? This is a song. So that's not really necessary. Yeah.
step yoga, Western yoga do this, and that, don't you think that sometimes yoga, when it's done in a proper way, can help us to increase our mantra meditation, for example, to calm down the mind and then through the breathing and then harmonizing the body and then help us to focus?
Well, maybe it didn't come out clearly, but I didn't condemn the other processes. I simply said that without the chanting, these processes are incomplete. So, of course, if you can actually derive help from any of the yoga systems, by all means, take it. If it's helping you, by all means. Because that's what yoga does, you know? It makes you aware that you're not a body, that you're a spiritual being, and that you have to practice some kind of connection. Because yoga means to link. That's the word yoga comes from the Sanskrit root yuk, which means to unite, yuk, Y-U-K, like to put together. So to put together the individual consciousness and the supreme consciousness. So that's the idea of yoga. So if any of the process of yoga helps you bring you up, you know, to that point. Like let's say you want to change a light bulb, but you need a ladder, right? So yoga is the ladder that takes you there. Then you have to find the light bulb and then replace it and so on. Of course, take it. Whatever works for you. Yeah, don't give up anything. Just add something that you may not have. Yeah? Okay, vielen Dank. Thank you for having us. And
Almost.